lights around her eyes felt warm now.
What do you see now?
Wow!
Renna looked around, amazed. Trees and plants now glowed of their own accord, and there was a glowing mist seeping about her feet like a low and lazy fog.
Everything. More than I see in the sun. It's all glowing.
You're seeing magic. It seeps up from the core and gives all living things a spark of it that makes them glow.
Their soul?
I ain't a tender. Corlings are infused with it and will flare brightly to your eyes now.
Renna turned toward a rustle in the brush, and a wood demon there, invisible a moment before, now shone in the magic-lit world. She looked at her own hand, glowing only faintly. Twilight Dancer was brighter. Wards on his hooves and harness glowed like stars in the sky. But it was Arlen who shone brightest, the wards on his skin positively brimming over with power. It looked as if they were written in light, permanently activated.
Too many wards. Soaked up too much demon magic to ever be just a man again.
Why would you ever want to give up such power?
Arlen paused, seeming confused. He opened his mouth and closed it.
I don't know I would, but it ain't a choice you can take back, and I wasn't in my right head when I made it. You ain't in your right head either.
Who are you, Arlen Bales, to tell me when my head is right?
He ignored her in that infuriating way he had, taking up a spear and handing it to her. She looked at it doubtfully and made no effort to take it.
Speaker's all done it.
I know that. But if I'm gonna fight, it'll be with my own knife.
It's a fine blade, sharp enough to shave.
Dad cared for it better than he did his own kin.
Arlen looked at her but said nothing. He held the knife this way and that, inspecting the etched wards.
Good warden. Good as any I've seen. Could do with more, but this is enough to start.
He handed it back, pommel first.
All that's left is to test it. Time to leave the circle.
Arlen put a hand on her shoulder.
We're miles from nowhere, Ren. Corlings cluster where there's people to hunt or big game. Won't be but a few out here. You got your cloak, and I'm right here.
To save me?
He nodded, and she felt a flash of anger. She was tired of waiting for others to save her, but she looked at a wood demon stalking the edge of the road.
I ain't ready for this.
No, you're scared, Spitless. I was my first time, but I learned in Crazia to embrace my fear.
How's that?
Open yourself to the feeling, and then step back to a place beyond.
Well, that don't make any sense.
It does. Seen boys half my age charge demons with nothing more than a wardless spear between them. Seeing them ignore pain and keep fighting like everything's sunny till they win or drop dead. Fear and pain can only touch you if you let them.
Honest word?
Arlen lifted a finger, pointing to a small wood demon clinging to a nearby tree. It would otherwise have blended with the trunk perfectly, but now it glowed fiercely to her warded eyes, a stark contrast with the dimmer glow of the tree. Trusting in her cloak, Renna left the circle and walked calmly to the demon. It sniffed the air with a look of vague curiosity, but gave no sign it sensed her proximity. There was a shock up her right arm as if she had just put the whole arm in a roaring fire, a pain that pulsed with ecstasy. Renna straightened. She felt stronger, more alive than she ever had in her life. Across the road, she caught a glimpse of a flame demon's glowing eyes, and this time, she didn't hesitate. Her eyes hard as she charged and dropped to one knee, putting the blade right through its head. The original wood demon she had seen on the road was 6 feet tall and noticed the commotion. She could have hidden behind her cloak, but the thought never occurred to her as Renna launched herself at it. The demon took a swipe at her, but Renna was fast and strong like she had never dreamed, and she dodged the clumsy attack and put her knife in its chest. She looked around, breathing hard, but not in exhaustion. It felt more like lust. She wanted there to be more demons, wanted there to be a horde of them, but there were none.
Told you.
Arlen gathered the circles back up and took Twilight Dancer's reins.
Let's go for a ride in the naked night. Free.
Renna nodded, vaulting easily into the giant stallion's saddle without touching the stirrup. She took the front position, leaving room for Arlen to climb in behind her. He leapt into place as easily as she had. He put his arms about her, and she kicked Twilight Dancer. The stallion leapt forward, and they galloped down the glowing night road.
Woohoo!
Ha
It had been a full turn since the Corling Prince glimpsed its prey in the walled breeding ground. It was forced to spend two nights tracking the one, coming at last to soar above an abandoned ruin thick with his scent. Fresh wards protected the structure, strong ones, but easily breached nonetheless. There was no need, however, as the mind demon spotted the human mind moving through the woods far from the walls. With a flap of its gargantuan wings, the mimic banked and soared toward the human. The mind demon reached out with its thought, seeking access to the one's thoughts, but it was turned away by powerful warding. As it spread its probe wider, it discovered he was not alone. The human mind traveled with a female whose mind was as open as the sky. It slipped quietly into her thoughts and rested unnoticed, seeing through her eyes. Renna stabbed hard into the wood demon, twisting the blade up into its heart. Next to her, Barlin had wrestled the other one to the ground, holding it prone while the killing wards all over his body did their work. Renna looked up to see a third demon appear in the branches above her. She twisted as it dropped, but caught the hilt of her knife on the ridge armor of the first demon. The Corling fell dead, and the weapon was twisted from her grasp.
Demon shit!
She dropped to her back and coiled her legs as Arlen had taught her. She caught the wood demon's branch-like arms and pulled them aside as she kicked out, using its own momentum against it. The demon landed right in front of Arlen, who crushed its skull.
You let me ward my knuckles, I could do that myself.
Ain't no need to ward your skin. Knife's good enough for now.
Renna went over to the wood demon, pulling her knife free. She held it up for Arlen to see.
Didn't have the knife.
You handled it well enough without.
Only because you weren't still wrestling that other one. Ain't looking to use a needle, only a brush and some blackstim.
Feedback's different when the wards are on your skin, Ren. Strong enough to lose yourself in. I was lost a long time after I started doing it, and I ain't myself even now. I don't want to see that happen to you. You mean too much to me.
I do?
Good to have someone to talk to other than Dancer. I get lonely.
Lonely? Know what that's like. Apt to lose yourself there, too. World's full of things to lose yourself in. Don't mean we should spend our whole lives behind the wards.
I can't tell you what to do, Ren. You want to ignore me and paint your hands? It's on you.
The Corling Prince observed the courting for several more minutes, amused by human mating rituals. It was clear the one barely understood his magic, oblivious to the mind demon's presence or the extent of his own powers. He had the potential to be a unifier, but here, in the wilderness, he was no threat and could be safely observed. The demon let go the female's surface thoughts, probing more deeply into her mind for information on the one, but there was little of value. It planted a question on her lips.
How'd you bring back the lost wards?
Told you. I found them in a ruin.
What ruin? Where?
What does it matter? It ain't some jongler's saga.
I'm sorry. Don't know why I got so interested. Don't matter. Ain't looking to pry.
Huh.
It was well after dark by the time the council meeting ended. As Leisha expected, they had voted unanimously against her going back to Ryzen with Shardir, and had all been appropriately shocked when she reminded them their votes meant exactly nothing. Leisha was without the benefit of her warded cloak for the walk back to her cottage, but Roger layered a protective field of music around the group, as potent as any ward net. His powers seemed to have increased tenfold with his new fiddle, but Wanda and Garrod kept their weapons ready as they escorted Darcy and Vika.
Still say you're out of your skull.
You're welcome to your opinion, Darcy, but it isn't open for debate.
What are we supposed to do if they take you? Ain't like we can mount a rescue. And you're what holds this town together, especially with the Deliverer gone off to Creator knows where.
Prince Thamus and the Wooden Soldiers will be here soon.
They ain't gonna come for you either.
I don't expect them to. You'll just have to trust me to take care of myself.
I'm more worried about the rest of us. If you marry this man, we lose you forever. And if you don't, we'll likely lose you that way as well. What are we supposed to do?
That's why I brought you here tonight.
Leisha's cottage came into sight, and they were barely inside before she signaled Wanda to lift the trap door to her basement workshop.
Everyone but Vika and Darcy stays up here. This is Gatherer's business.
The others nodded, and Leisha escorted the women down the stairs, lighting her cool chemic lamps on the way.
Creator.
Darcy had not seen the cellar in many years, since Bruna had dismissed her as an apprentice. Leisha had expanded it greatly since then, and it now covered the whole underside of the cottage and most of the yard as well, an enormous space. Warded support pillars ran along the walls of the main chamber and the many offshoot tunnels.
There's enough flame work here to turn the hollow into the face of the sun!
Why do you think I've kept my cottage so far from town? I've been brewing demon fire and rolling thundersticks every night for a year.
Why didn't you tell anyone?
Because no one else need know. I won't have the cutters or the town council determining how this should be used. It's Gatherer's business, and you'll dole it out sparingly while I'm gone, and only when it will preserve lives. And I'll have your words that you'll keep the same silence, or I'll dose your tea so you don't remember being here at all.
I swear.
Darcy hesitated a moment longer, but finally nodded.
Swear by the sun, but even this won't last you don't come back.
Leisha nodded, turning to a table piled high with books.
These are the secrets of fire.
Jardir smiled broadly as Leisha and her escort arrived. It was a smaller group than he had anticipated for such a powerful woman. Just her parents, Roger, Giant Garrod, and the female Sharam Wanda.
That one will set the Dharma in a frenzy,
Aban indicated Wanda.
They will demand she give up her weapons and cover herself. You should ask that she stay behind.
I promised Leisha that she could choose her chaperone, and I will not go back on my word. Our people must begin to accept the ways of the Hollow Tribe. Perhaps showing them a woman who fights Alagai Sharak is a good way to begin.
If she acquits herself well before them.
I've seen the woman fight. With proper training, she could become as formidable as any Sharam.
Tread carefully, Aman. Force change on our people too quickly, and many of them will reject it.
Jardir nodded, knowing well the truth of Aban's words.
I want you to keep close to Leisha on the trip back to Evrim's Bounty. Use the pretext of teaching her our language, as she has requested. It would be unseemly for me to attend her too closely, but her Greenland chaperone should accept you.
Better than the Dar Sharam, I'm sure.
I want to know everything about her. The food she likes to eat, the scents that give her pleasure, everything.
Of course, I will see to it.
While the Dal Sharam broke camp, Aban limped over to the covered wagon Leisha and her parents rode in. The woman drove the horses herself, Aban noted in surprise. No servants to attend her, nor keep her hands from work. His respect for her grew.
May I ride with you, mistress? My master has asked that I instruct you in our language as you requested.
Of course, Aban. Roger can take a horse.
Roger, seated next to her in the driver's seat of the cart, made a face.
If you prefer, son of Jessam, you may ride my camel.
Roger looked at the animal dubiously until he saw the canopied and pillowed seat, spacious and richly appointed. A glitter came to his eyes.
She is a gentle beast who will follow the other animals without direction.
Well, if it will be a favor to you.
Of course.
Roger grabbed his fiddle and somersaulted off the cart, running over to the camel.
May I ask you a question, Aban?
Of course, mistress.
Have you used that crutch since birth?
I wasn't born this way, no. I was injured during Hanupash.
Hanupash?
As good a place as any to begin your lessons.
Aban climbed into the cart and took a seat next to her.
In your tongue, it means life's path. All Krasian boys are taken from their mothers at a young age and brought to their tribe's Sharaj, a training barrack, to learn if Evrim has meant them to be Sharum, Dama, or Kafit. My leg was inevitable. I was never a warrior, and I knew it, right from the first day. I was born a Kafit, and the rigors of Hanupash proved it.
Nonsense.
Aman thought much as you do.
Did he? I wouldn't guess it from the way he treats you.
I beg that you forgive him for that, mistress. My master was called to Hanupash the same day I was, and he fought against Evrim's hand time and again, carrying me through the Kaji Sharaj on his back. He gave me chance after chance, and I let him down every time I was tested.
Were they fair tests?
Nothing on Allah is fair, mistress. A warrior's life, least of all. Either you are weak or you are strong. Bloodthirsty or pious. Brave or cowardly. Hanupash reveals a boy's inner man, and in my case, at least, it was successful. I am not Sharum in my heart.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Oh, indeed not. And I am not. Aman knows my value, but it would be unseemly for him to show me kindness in front of the other men.
Kindness is never unseemly.
Life in the desert is harsh, mistress, and it has made my people equally so. I beg you, do not judge us until you know us well.
That's why I'm coming. In the meantime, let me examine you. I might be able to do something for your leg.
An image flashed before Aben's eyes of Aman catching sight as Aben lowered his silken pants for Leisha's examination. His life wouldn't be worth a bag of sand after that.
I am Kafit, mistress, not worthy of your attentions.
You are a man like any other. And if you're going to spend any time with me, I'll not suffer to hear you say otherwise.
I knew another Greenlander once who thought as you do.
Oh? What was his name?
Arlen, son of Jeff, from the Bales clan of Tibet's Brook.
Aben saw her eyes flare with recognition, even though her face showed no other sign.
Tibet's Brook is far from here, in the Duchy of Milne. I've never had the pleasure to meet anyone from there. What was he like?
He was known to my people as the Parchin, or Brave Outsider, equally at home in the bazaar and the Sharom's Maze. Alas, he left our city years ago, never to return.
Perhaps one day you'll meet him again.
Inavera, if Avram wills it, I would be pleased to see my friend again and know that he is well.
They rode together for the rest of the day, speaking of many things, but the subject of the Parchin never rose again. Leisha's silence on the matter told Aben much. Slowed as they were by the trundling cart, the Dalsharim could not give their chargers their head when the sun set, leaving them vulnerable to demons. Aben gave the order that they stop and make camp. Aben was erecting his tent when Aben summoned him.
How went your first day?
She has a fast mind. I started by teaching her simple phrases, but she was dissecting the sentence structure in minutes. She'd be able to introduce herself to anyone and discuss the weather by the time we reach Evrim's Bounty, and proficient by winter.
It is Evrim's will that she learn our tongue.
Perhaps.
What else did you learn?
She likes apples.
Apples?
A northern tree fruit.
You spoke to the woman all day, and all you learned was that she likes apples?
Red and hard, fresh picked from the tree.
Aben smiled as Aman's face deepened into a scowl. He reached into his pocket, holding up a piece of fruit.
Apples, like this one.
Aben's smile nearly reached his ears. Aben left Aman's tent, feeling a slight twinge of guilt at withholding Leisha's reaction to his mention of the Parchin. He had not lied, but even in his own heart, Aben could not explain the omission. The Parchin was his friend, it was true, but Aben had never let friendship stand in the way of prosperity, and his prosperity was inextricably tied to Aben's success in conquering the North. The surest road to that success would be for Aben to find and kill the Parchin quickly. The son of Jeff was not an enemy any man should take lightly. But Aben had survived as Kafit by keeping secrets and waiting for the proper opportunity to exploit them, and there was no secret in all the world greater than this one. Leisha was stirring a cookpot when Jardir came to her circle. Like the warded man, he walked casually through the unwarded areas of the Creation's haphazard camp. He wore Leisha's warded cloak about his shoulders, but it was thrown back, offering him no protection from calling eyes.
May I join you at the fire?
Of course, son of Hoshkameen.
Leisha had replied in the Creation tongue. As Aben had taught her, she broke a piece from a fresh loaf of bread and held it out to him.
Share bread with us.
Jardir smiled widely, bowing low as he accepted the bread. Roger and the others came to the pot for their meals as well, but all drifted away at a meaningful look from Leisha. Only Alona stayed in earshot, which Jardir seemed to think was perfectly proper, even if Leisha resented the spying.
Your food continues to delight my tongue.
It's a simple stew.
I hope your belly is not too full.
Jardir pulled out a large red apple.
I have grown fond of this northern fruit, and would share it with you as you shared your bread.
I would like that.
Jardir produced a small knife, cutting neat round slices for them to enjoy. Leisha savored the sweet crunch of every bite, and it took them some time to finish the fruit. Leisha noticed that however fond he might be of apples, he left almost all of it to her, nibbling only on the irregular cuts and watching her chew with delight in his eyes.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
It was my pleasure. And now, if you wish, it would be my pleasure to read to you passages from the Avesia, as I have promised.
Leisha smiled and nodded, producing the slender leather-bound book from one of the deep pockets of her dress.
I would like that very much. But if you are to read me your book, You must start from the beginning and swear to read it through, omitting nothing.
Jardir tilted his head at her, and for a moment Leisha worried that she might have offended him. But then, slowly, a smile crept across his face.
That will take many nights.
My nights seem to be rather free at the moment.
Surprisingly, it was not Wanda who garnered the most attention when they reached Evrim's Bounty, but Garrett. Jardir watched the eyes of the Sharim take in the cutter's enormous frame and powerful muscles, searching for weaknesses, sizing him up for the kill as they did everyone. It was the Sharim way to be ready to fight anyone, enemy, brother, father, or friend. Every one of his warriors would be eager to test his strength against the giant northern warrior. The Sharim who brought him down would carry great honor. It was only after the warriors had assessed Garrett, the most obvious threat, that their eyes slipped to Wanda, and a few did a double take, realizing she was a woman. They sent no word ahead, but when they rode into the courtyard of Jardir's palace, Enevra and the Damaji Ting were there waiting for them. Enevra lay on a pillowed palanquin, held up by muscular-chinned slaves clad only in beetos and vests. She was dressed as scandalously as ever, and even the Greenlanders gasped and colored at the sight of her as her slaves set the palanquin down and she rose to her feet. Her hips swayed hypnotically as she came to Jardir with her hands outstretched.
Who is that?
My first wife, Damaja Enevra. The others are my lesser wives.
Leisha looked at him sharply, and as Aben had warned, her face became a storm cloud.
You're already married?
Of course. I am Shah Damaka.
Leisha opened her mouth to retort, but Enevra reached them, and she swallowed whatever she had been about to say.
Husband.
Enevra embraced him and kissed him deeply.
How I've missed your warmth in our bed.
Allow me to present my honored guest, Mistress Leisha, daughter of Ernie, first herb gatherer of the Hollow Tribe.
Enevra's eyes narrowed at the title, and she glared at Jardir, then Leisha. For her part, Leisha acquitted herself well, not backing down an inch, and she met Enevra's gaze with a calm serenity and dipped into the skirt-spreading bow the women of the Greenlands favored.
An honor to meet you, Damaja.
Enevra's smile and return bow were equally unreadable, and Jardir knew then that Aben was right. Enevra would not accept this woman as a Jiwa Sen, and would certainly not take it well when Jardir married her anyway and gave her dominion over the women of the North.
I would speak with you in private, husband.
Jardir nodded. Now that the moment to face her had come, he had no desire to delay. He thanked Evrim that the sun was still high and she could not use her Hora magic in its light. Jardir spoke in his native tongue.
Aben, see to it that the Palace of Mirrors is made ready for Mistress Leisha and her entourage during their stay.
I believe Damaji Ikak is using the Palace of Mirrors at the moment.
Then he will need to make new arrangements.
I understand.
Jardir bowed to Leisha.
Please, excuse me. I must consult with my wife. Aben will see to your accommodations. When you are settled, I will come to call on you.
Leisha nodded, a cool gesture that warned of fire beneath. Jardir felt his pulse quicken at the sight, and it gave him strength as he and Enevra strode into his palace.
What is the purpose of bringing that woman here?
Enevra spoke when they were alone in her pillow chamber beside the throne room.
The bones have not told you?
Of course they have, but I hold out hope that this once they are wrong and you are not such a fool.
Marriages cemented my power in Krasia. Is it so foolish to think that they would serve the same in the Northland?
These are Chin, husband. Fine for the Dal Sharum to breed, but there is not a woman among them worthy to carry your seed.
I disagree. This Leisha is as worthy as any woman I have ever met.
Well, it does not matter. The bones have spoken against her, and I will not approve the match.
You are correct. It matters not. I will still marry her.
You cannot. I am Jiwa Ka, and I decide who else you may marry.
You are my Krasian Jiwa Ka. Leisha shall be my Greenland Jiwa Ka and have dominion over all my wives in the north.
Enevra's eyes bulged, and he thought for a moment they would pop right out of her face. She came at him, long painted nails leading the way. Jardir blocked and dodged with minimal contact as Enevra pressed her attack. Her long legs, clad only in thin diaphanous silk, kicked high and fast as her fingers stabbed at him, seeking the weak points where a man's muscles and nerves join. Eventually, he caught her wrist and flipped her onto the pile of pillows.
Attack me again, and Damating or no, I will kill you.
The heathen harlot has bewitched your mind.
Perhaps. Or perhaps she has begun to set it free.
The Magi Akak sneered at them as he left the Palace of Mirrors with his wives and children.
If eyes could core you, his would.
You'd think he hadn't stolen that manse from some Rhizonian royal.
Who knows of these people? He might have taken it as an honor if we had done him the courtesy of killing him and his family first.
That isn't funny, Roger.
I don't know that I was joking.
Aban came out of the manse soon after, bowing deeply.
Your palace awaits, mistress. My wives will be preparing the lower floors for your entourage, but your private chambers, the entire top floor, are ready to receive you.
Leisha looked up at the giant manse. There were dozens of windows on the top floor alone. That whole floor was for her personal use? It was easily 10 times the size of the entire cottage she shared with Wanda.
She gets the whole floor?
Of course. Your chambers shall be richly appointed as well, son of Jessam. But tradition dictates a virgin bride be kept alone on the top floor with her chaperones below to ensure that she don her wedding veil with her honor intact.
I have not agreed to Aman's proposal.
That is so, but neither have you refused, and so you remain my master's intended until you make your decision. The rules of tradition are unbending here, I am afraid. And I strongly advise you, mistress, that unless your answer is yes, you make no final decision while in Evrim's bounty.
They entered the manse, seeing black-clad women everywhere as they polished and straightened. The main entry hall was lined on either side with mirrors reflecting the walls into infinity. The carpet running along the center of the polished stone floor was rich and thick, with bright dyes in the weave, and the banister of the wide stairwell leading up was painted in gold and ivory. Portraits, presumably of the previous owners, lined the walls, watching them ruefully as they ascended the steps. Leisha wondered what had become of them when the Krasians came.
If you would be so kind as to wait up here with your entourage, mistress, I will return shortly to escort them each to their own chambers.
Leisha nodded, and Aban bowed and left them in a massive sitting room whose windows overlooked all of Rhizon proper.
Step outside and guard the door, Garrod.
When the portal was closed, Leisha whirled on her mother.
You told them I was a virgin?
They assumed it. I just let them keep the assumption.
And if I do marry him and he learns I'm not?
Oh, he wouldn't be the first bride to go to her marriage bed a woman. Ain't no man gonna turn away a woman he covets over that.
It doesn't matter. I'm not gonna be just another bride in a harem. The nerve of him bringing me here without telling me.
Oh, for night's sake! You've got no excuse for not knowing. Every Krasian tale ever told starts with a lord with dozens of bored wives locked in a harem. What difference does it make anyway? You already said you had no intention of marrying him.
No one asked you.
You already knew he was married, didn't you? You knew, and you still tried to trade me off like a piece of livestock.
Oh, I knew, yes, and I also know that he could burn the hollow to ashes or make my daughter a queen. Was my choice so bad?
Who I marry isn't your choice to make.
Well, someone has to make it. You sure as not weren't going to.
What have you promised them, Mother? And what did they offer in return?
Promised? It's a marriage. All the groom wants is a bed toy and a baby maker. I promised you were fertile and would provide sons. That was all.
You're disgusting. Just how could you know that anyway?
I might have mentioned your 6 older brothers, all tragically killed fighting demons.
Oh. Mother!
Do you think 6 was too many? Well, I was worried I overplayed, but Aban accepted it right away. And even seemed disappointed. I think I could have gone even higher.
Even 1 is too many. Lying about dead children? Have you no respect?
Respect for what? The poor souls of children who don't exist?
Oh, it was a mistake coming here.
It's a little late to see that. Even if they let us go, it would be the same as spitting in their faces if we left now.
The pain behind Leisha's eyes flared sharply, bringing on a wave of nausea.
Wanda, fetch my herb pouch.
Her mother would be easier to deal with after she had taken a tincture for blood flow to ease the headache. Jardir arrived soon after the lower rooms were ready and her friends escorted down to them. Leisha wondered if he had purposely waited until she was alone before visiting. He stood in the doorway and bowed, but did not enter.
I do not wish to give dishonor. Would you prefer to have your mother present to chaperone?
I'd as soon be chaperoned by a Coraline. I think I can handle you if you put a hand where it doesn't belong.
Of course. I have no doubt. I must apologize for the meanness of your accommodations. I wish I had a palace worthy of your power and beauty, but alas, this poor hovel is the best Evrim's bounty has to offer at the moment.
Why didn't you tell me you were already married?
Your pardon, mistress. I assumed you knew. Your mother suggested I not speak of it because your jealousy rivals your beauty, and thus must be terrible indeed.
I was flattered by your proposal. Creator, I even considered it. But I do not fancy being a part of a crowd, Amon. Such things are not done in the North. Marriage is a union of two, not two dozen.
I cannot change what is, but I beg you still not to rush to decision. I would make you my first wife in the Northland, with power of refusal to all who come after. If you wish me to take no other Greenland brides, it shall be so. Think carefully on this. If you bear me sons, my people will have no choice but to accept the Hollow Tribe.
Leisha frowned, but she knew better than to refuse him flatly. They were in his power and knew it. Again, she found herself regretting her rash decision to come.
Night will fall soon. I have come to invite you and your bodyguards to Alagai Sharak.
Leisha looked at him for a long moment, considering.
Our war with the Alagai is the common ground our people stand on. It will help my warriors to accept you if they see we are siblings in the night.
All right. Though my parents will stay behind.
Of course. I swear by Evrim's beard that they will be safe here.
Is there a reason to worry to the contrary?
Of course not. I was simply stating the obvious. Forgive me.
Leisha was impressed with the tight units the Krasian warriors formed for inspection as Jardir led Leisha and the others to Alagai Sharak. Aban limped at her side, and Leisha was grateful as ever for his presence. Her understanding of the Krasian language was progressing rapidly, but there were hundreds of cultural rules she and the others did not understand. Much like Roger, Aban could speak without moving his lips, and his whispered hints of when to bow and when to nod, when to placate and when to stand fast, had kept them all from conflict so far. But more than that, Leisha found she liked Aban. Despite an injury that put him in the lowest echelon of his society, the Cafete had managed to keep his spirits and his humor, and had risen to new power of a sort.
That can't be all of them.
Roger was looking at the assembled Sharam, over 1,000 in number.
No way that many men took the whole duchy. We can field that many fighters in the Hollow.
No, Roger. We can field carpenters and bakers, laundresses and seamstresses who will pick up a weapon at need to defend in the night. These men are professional soldiers.
Ugh, still ain't enough.
You are correct, of course. You see but a tiny fraction of the warriors at my master's command.
Aban gestured to the 12 units of men in the courtyard by the great gate.
These are the most elite fighters of each of the 12 tribes of Krasia, chosen as honor guards to their damaji in the city proper. Before you is the most invincible fighting force the world has ever seen. But even they are nothing compared with the million spears the Shardar Makah can muster. The rest of the tribes have dispersed throughout the hundreds of villages in Evrim's bounty.
A million spears. If Jardir could field even a quarter of that, the free cities would be best off to surrender quickly, and she should get used to the idea of being Jardir's bed toy. Arlen had seemed convinced the Krasian army was much smaller than that. Leisha looked at Aban, wondering if he was being honest. Dozens of questions popped into her mind, but she wisely kept them to herself, lest they reveal even more of her inner counsel.
And the people living in those villages? What became of them?
They live there still. You must think us monsters to fear we are slaying the innocent.
There are such rumors in the north, I'm afraid.
Well, they are untrue. The conquered people are taxed, yes, and the boys and the men trained in Alagai Sharak, but their lives are otherwise unchanged. And in return, they have pride in the night.
Again, Leisha studied Aban's face for a hint of where exaggeration might become lie, but she found nothing. Levying boys and men to war was a horror, but at least she could tell the distraught refugees back in the Hollow that their captured husbands, brothers, and sons were likely still alive. At the forefront of the ranks of soldiers stood two men, one in a white turban above warrior black, the other clad in Dama white.
My master's first son, Jayan, and his second, Asum.
Jardir strode out before the men, and the power he radiated was palpable. The warriors looked at him in awe, and even his sons had a fanatical gleam in their eyes. Leisha was surprised to find that after only 2 weeks of instruction, she understood most of what he said.
Sharum of the Desert Spear! Tonight, we are honored to be joined in Alagashirak by Sharum of the Hollow Tribe to the north, our brothers in the night.
Shardir gestured to Leisha's group.
They are to fight?
Father, the Avisha states clearly that women are barred from Sharak.
The Avisha was written by the Deliverer. I am the Deliverer now, and I will say how Sharak is fought.
I will not fight alongside a woman.
Shardir struck like a lion, his hand a blur as he seized his son by the throat. Jayan's feet left the ground, toes barely scraping the dirt, as Shardir flexed his arm to its full length. Leisha started forward, but Abin blocked her with his crutch, applying surprising strength.
Don't be a fool.
Something in the urgency of his voice checked Leisha, and she eased back, watching helplessly as Shardir choked the life from his son. She drew a relieved breath as the boy was cast to the ground.
What kind of animal attacks his own son?
Didn't have no choice. Ain't no one going into the night following a paw who can't even keep his own boys in line.
I don't need advice from the town bully, Garrett.
No, he's right. I didn't understand what they said, but my pa would have smacked my nose off if I took that tone with him. Reckon it'll do him good to eat a little dirt.
Leisha stared at Wanda in surprise.
It seems our ways are not as different as they first appear, mistress.
Alagashirak was a nightly sweep around the perimeter of the city. The Sharum exited the north gate and spread out shoulder to shoulder and shield to shield, six tribes heading east and six west, killing any Alagai in their path until they met at the south gate. To avoid further conflict, Shardir deliberately sent Jayan and Asom east while taking Leisha and the others west. Abin was left behind at the gate. None of the Hollow Tribe carried shields, so Shardir put them behind the line, personally escorting Leisha with Hasik and a handful of the spears of the Deliverer. Demons filtered in quickly after the Dalsharim passed to feed on the corpses of Korlings left for the sun, and they did not hesitate to attack the small group. At first, the Krasians had sought to protect them, but as Shardir had hoped, Leisha and the others quickly disabused them of the need. Leisha hurled her fire magic at the Alagai, scattering them like sand in the wind. Garrett and Wanda strode into packs of demons with impunity, the giant cutter hacking them to pieces with his axe and machete, as Wanda's bow hummed like the strings of Roja's fiddle, killing every demon she so much as glanced at from afar. She was well away from the others when her arrows ran out. A flame demon charged at her, and one of the spears of the Deliverer rushed to defend her. He needn't have bothered. Wanda slung the bow from her shoulder and grabbed the demon by the horns, pivoting to avoid its fire spit and turning it to the ground with a smooth Sharasak twist. A warded knife appeared in her hand, slashing the demon's throat. She looked up and the Ikar lust in her eyes matched that of any Sharum Shardir had ever seen. She smiled to the dumbstruck Dalsharum, who had a moment before been rushing to save her. But then her eyes widened and she pointed to the sky.
Look out!
A wind demon dropped from the sky, tearing through the warrior's armor and laying him open with its deadly talons. Everyone reacted at once. A warded knife appeared in Roja's hand, flying to strike the demon at the same time as Wanda's thrown blade and three spears, dropping it before it could take back to the sky. Leisha lifted her skirts and ran to the fallen warrior. The warrior Rastavi had served Shardir loyally for years. His armor was soaked with blood. He struggled madly as Leisha tried to look at his wound.
Hold him down. I can't work with him thrashing about.
Shardir complied, taking Rastavi's shoulders and pinning him firmly.
I am ready, Deliverer. Bless me and send me on the Roadmaker Road.
What's he saying?
Leisha cut his thick robe, casting aside the shattered ceramic plates within.
He is telling me his soul is ready for heaven. He asks that I bless him with a quick death.
He'll do no such thing. You tell him his soul may be ready, but his body isn't.
Shardir took Rastavi's face in his hands, meeting his eyes.
You are a spear of the Deliverer. You will walk the lonely road when I command it, and not before. Embrace the pain and be still.
Rastavi's struggles ceased. Leisha looked at the man in surprise, then pushed Shardir aside and set to work.
Hasik, have the shield wall continue on. I will wait with the mistress as she attends Rastavi.
To what end? Even if he survives, he will never lift the spear again.
You know that no better than I. It is in Evra.
I will not interfere with my betrothed any more than I would a Damating.
The spears of the Deliverer remained behind, forming a circle with Leisha and Rustavi at its center. But there was little need. Roger wove a shield of sound around them, and no Alagai dared draw near.
We can move him. I've stopped the bleeding, but he'll need more surgery. And for that, I'll need a proper table and better light.
Will he live to fight another day?
He's alive. Isn't that enough for now?
If he cannot fight, he will likely take his own life later.
Or else he becomes Kafit?
Rustavi has killed hundreds of Alagai. His place in heaven is assured.
Then why would he kill himself?
He is Shurum. He is meant to die on Alagai talons, not old and shriveled in some bed, a burden to his family and tribe. This is why the Damating do not see to the wounded until dawn.
So the ones injured most deeply will be dead?
Yes.
That's inhuman.
It is our way.
And there is the difference between us. Your people live to fight, while mine fight to live. What will you do when you win Sharak Ka and have nothing left to fight for?
Then Allah and heaven will be as one, and all will be paradise.
So why did you not kill that man when he asked you to?
Because you asked that I not. I made the mistake once of ignoring such a plea from one of your people, and it almost cost our friendship.
The one Avan calls the Parchin?
What did the Kafit tell you of him?
Nothing, other than that they were friends and that I reminded him of him. Why?
The Parchin was my friend too, and you are like he was in some ways and different in others. The Parchin had a Sharum's heart.
Meaning
he fought for others to live as you do, but for himself, he lived to fight. When his body was broken and the odds without hope, he clawed his way to his feet and fought to his last breath.
He's dead?
Many years since.
Leisha worked deep into the night in the surgery of a former Razonian hospit, cutting and stitching the injured Dalsharim back together again. Her arms were covered in blood and her back ached from bending over the table, but Rustavi would live, and likely recover fully. The Damating, who had taken over the building, whispered among themselves as she worked, watching Leisha in something part wonder and part horror. She could sense their anger at her intrusion, especially at night, and their resentment of her barked orders, but her translator was Jardir himself. Wanda and Garrod had been forced to remain outside, as had Roger and Jardir's bodyguards. The Damating, acting like captives in their own home, breathed an almost palpable sigh of relief when Enevera stormed into the surgery. Her face was livid with rage as she strode right up to Leisha, standing nose to nose.
How dare you?
How dare I what? Save the life of a man you would have let bleed until dawn?
Enevera's only response was to slap Leisha in the face, her sharp nails drawing blood. Leisha was knocked aside, and before she could recover, the woman drew a curved knife and came at her again.
You are not fit to stand in my husband's presence, much less lie in his bed.
Leisha's hand darted into one of the many pockets of her apron, and as Enevera drew close, she snapped her fingers in the Damaja's face, scattering blinding powder in a tiny cloud. Enevera fell away, clutching her face as Leisha righted herself. Enevera splashed a pitcher of water in her face, and when she looked back at Leisha, her face powders were running in horrid streaks. Her reddened, hate-filled eyes promised death.
Enough! I forbid you to fight!
You forbid me?
Leisha felt much the same. Jardir could no more forbid her anything than Arlen, but Jardir was only focused on Enevera. He raised the spear of Khaji for all to see.
I do! Do you intend to disobey?
Silence fell over the room, and the other Damating looked at one another in confusion. Enevera might be their leader, but Jardir was the voice of their god. Leisha could well imagine what might happen if Enevera resisted further. Indeed, the woman seemed to realize it as well, and deflated. She turned on her heel and stormed from the hospit, snapping her fingers to the other Damating, who all followed after her.
I will pay for that.
Jardir spoke in Krasian, but Leisha understood. For a moment, his shoulders slumped, and he looked not like the invincible and infallible leader of Krasia, but like her own father after a fight with Alona. She could almost see Jardir imagining all the myriad ways Enevera could make his life miserable, and her heart went out to him. The tired man vanished in an instant, replaced again by the most powerful man in the world. Jardir burst from the Damating sanctuary, Leisha following close behind. Amkaji and Koliv had put lines on Garrod's wrists, and three Dalsharim pulled on the rope to either arm, hauling at him like a raging stallion. One warrior clung tenaciously to his great back, his arms crossed in front of the giant's throat in an attempt to choke him down, but if Garrett even noticed, he gave no sign. The warrior's feet swung far from the ground, and even those pulling on the line stumbled to keep him contained. Roger was pinned helplessly, almost casually, against a wall by another Dalsharim, who held him in place with one hand as he watched what was transpiring, an amused grin on his face.
What is going on here? Where is the woman?
The cry came from an alley between the buildings.
Any warrior touching one of the Greenlanders when I return will lose the offending hands.
Jardir charged to the alley, flying past the others at blinding speed. Wanda was in the alleyway, held from behind by a warrior. She bit into his arm. Another warrior lay on the ground, clutching between his legs, and a third, Jerem, leaned against the wall, staring in horror at an arm twisted in an impossible direction.
Release her!
Everyone looked up at Jardir. Wanda was released instantly, and she drove an elbow into the stomach of the warrior behind her, doubling him over as she reached for the knife at her belt. Jardir pointed his spear at her.
Do not.
Just then, Leisha made it to the alley. She ran to Wanda immediately.
What happened?
Those sons of the court tried to rape me!
The Northern whore lies, Deliverer. She attacked us and broke my arm. I demand her life!
You expect us to believe that Wanda lured the three of you here and attacked you?
Jardir ignored them both. It was obvious what had happened. He had hoped Wanda's prowess on the battlefield would impress the warriors enough to dissuade this sort of behavior, but Jerem and the others had apparently felt the need to remind her that off the battlefield she was still a woman and an unmarried one at that. By Evesian law, she had no right to refuse a Sharam or attack a man for any reason. Jerem and the others had committed no crime. They were within their rights to demand the girl's life. But the Greenlanders did not see it that way. Jardir knew, and he needed their warriors, man and women alike, for Sharaka. He glanced at Leisha and knew, too, that not all his reasons were selfless. The Sharam would have to be taught to control themselves, an abject lesson like the one he had given Hasik so many years before. Jardir swept his arm at Jerem and the others, then pointed at the wall. They obediently lined up, back straight, all of them ignoring wounds the girl had inflicted. She was a born warrior, whatever her gender.
I am intended toward Mistress Leisha. An insult to one of the mistress's servants is an insult to her. An insult to her is an insult to me.
Jardir looked Jerem in the eyes, lightly touching his chest with the point of the spear of Kaji.
Have you insulted me, Jerem?
Jerem's eyes widened. He looked frantically at Wanda and then back at Jardir. He squirmed under the spear tip, though its touch was feather-light, and began to shake.
Forgive me, Shadamaka!
Jerem collapsed, falling to his knees. Jardir kicked him, taking a step backward and broadening his gaze to take in the warriors on either side of Jerem. Immediately, they too fell to their knees.
Silence!
He pointed to Wanda.
That woman killed more Alagide this night than the three of you combined, and so her honor is worth the three of your lives.
The men cowered, but they did not dare to speak in their defense.
Go to the temple and pray through the night and the coming day. You will take your spears and go into the night tomorrow, shieldless and clad only in black bidos. When you are pulled down, your bones will go to Sharikora.
The men shuddered with relief and kissed Jardir's feet, for in those words he had promised them the only thing Asharam truly feared to lose, a warrior's death and entry into heaven's paradise. Jardir looked back at Leisha, whose face was a sandstorm.
You just let them go?
Jardir realized that their exchange had been in Krasian, and she had likely understood only a fraction of what was said.
Of course not. They will be put to death.
But they thanked you.
For not castrating them and stripping them of the black.
Would have served the core sons right.
No, it would not.
What else do you require? They did not succeed in violating or even harming the girl, so it is not expected that they should compensate her for her virginity.
I ain't a virgin anyway.
Leisha looked at her sharply, but the girl only shrugged.
But it's required they pay with their lives?
They will die with honor. They will go naked into the night tomorrow with only their spears to protect them.
That's barbaric!
It was then Jardir understood. The Greenland taboo was death.
I had thought the punishment would please you, mistress. I can have them whipped, if you prefer.
Leisha looked to Wanda, who shrugged. She turned back to Jardir.
Very well. But we require to bear witness, and I to treat the men's wounds when the punishment is complete.
Of course, mistress. It will be done at sunset tomorrow for all the Sharam to see and remember.
I will administer the lashes myself.
Thank you. That will suffice.
This time...
Jardir smiled to see the fierceness in her eyes. Three spears of the Deliverer it took just to hold her, and none of them able to do the deed. With further training, even Kaisharam would fall before her. Looking at her, he came to a decision, one that he knew might well tear his army asunder, but Evarim had chosen him to lead Sharaka, and he would lead as he saw fit.
There will not be another Wandavar Flynn, Umcutter Umhollow. On this, you have my word.
Thank you.
Who's that?
Roger started awake and looked about him. His room was dark, though he could see cracks of light at the edges of the velvet curtains. Roger cracked an eye as one of Abin's wives, or perhaps one of his daughters, Roger could never tell the difference, entered. She was clad as they all were, in loose black robes that hid everything save their eyes, which were cast down in his presence.
You have a visitor, son of Jessam.
She moved to throw back the heavy velvet curtains, and Roger threw a hand over his eyes as light streamed in through the windows of his richly appointed bedroom. Leisha might have a whole floor of the giant manse, but Roger still had been given a full wing of the second floor, more rooms than the entire inn his parents had run in Riverbridge. Elona had been furious to learn of the largesse the Krasians had heaped upon him, having only gotten a bedroom and sitting room herself, luxurious though they were.
What hour is it?
Just after sunrise.
Tell whoever it is to come back later.
Oh, I cannot, master. Your visitor is the Damaja. You must see her at once.
Roger sat bolt upright, all thoughts of sleep forgotten. The whole palace was astir by the time Roger felt presentable enough to leave his chambers. His jongleur's paint box had taken the circles from beneath his eyes, and his bright red hair was brushed and tied back. He wore his best motley.
The Damaja? What in the court does she want with me?
Garrod was waiting for him in the hall and fell in behind him. Roger could not deny that he felt safer with a big cutter, and by the time he made it to the stairs, Leisha and Wanda were descending from above with Ernie and Elona in tow.
What does she want?
Search my pockets, you'll find no answers.
They all followed Roger down the stairs, making him feel as if he were leading them to a cliff. Roger was a performer, used to being the center of attention, but this was different. He put his hand to his chest, clutching his medallion through his shirt. The hard shape gave him comfort as he followed the gestures of Abin's women into the main receiving hall. As before, Roger felt his face heat at the sight of the Damaja. He had bedded dozens of village girls and more than one cultured Angerian royal, all of them fetching or pretty or even beautiful. While Leisha surpassed them all in beauty, she seemed almost unaware of that fact, making no effort to take advantage of her power. But the Damaja knew. The perfect curve of her chin and gentle shape of her nose behind her transparent veil, the wide exotic eyes with long sweeping lashes and the oiled black curls that spilled in rivulets down her shoulders. Her diaphanous robe covered everything and nothing, showcasing the smoothness of her arms and curving thighs, the round fullness of her breasts and the darkness of her areole, her hairless sex. The air about her was sweet with perfume. But more, every gesture, every stance, every expression brought all these things into a harmony that sang to every man in her presence. What Roger did to demons with his fiddle, the Damaja did to men with her body. He felt himself stiffen and was thankful for the looseness of his motley pants. She stood in the receiving hall, two girls standing behind her, covered in the Krasian fashion in Evera disdained, though her robes were fine silk. One was clad in the white of a Damating, the other in black. Long black braids fell from the back of their headscarves, bound in gold bands and reaching past their waists. Their eyes danced at him from behind their veils.
Roger Asu Jessam Amin Ambridge, I am honored to meet you.
Oh, Damaja, the honor is mine. That you have come here to meet one as insignificant as I.
Don't lay it too thick, Roger.
My husband bade me come, telling me you accepted his offer to find brides for you, that your magic be passed on to a new generation.
I did?
Of course. My husband offers you his eldest daughter, Amandva, for your Jiwaka.
There must be some...
mistake, he wanted to say, but the word caught in his throat as Anevera beckoned the other girl forward.
This is Amandva's servant, Sigva, daughter of Hanya, sister to the Shar Damaka.
His daughter and his niece?
My husband has made it known that Evaram speaks to you. He would not honor you with less than his own blood. Sigfa will make a suitable second wife if you wish. Amandva can then take over seeking future brides in accordance with your own tastes.
Creator, how many wives does one man need?
If he is worthy and they of him, a man should have as many as he can provide for and keep with child. But some are not worthy.
Who is Amandva's mother?
Anevra looked at her and raised a brow. Ilona spread her skirts and dipped into a smooth, respectful curtsy that seemed utterly at odds with the woman Roger knew.
Ilona Paper of Deliverer's Hollow. Alicia's mother?
Inevra's eyes widened at this news, and she smiled widely and went over to the woman, embracing her.
Of course. I am honored to meet you. There are a great many matters for us to discuss, but that is for another time. I understand the son of Jessam's mother is with Evaram. Will you stand for her in these proceedings?
Of course.
Stand for her? How?
To ensure you behave as they lift their veils, and to verify their virginity. I am Amandva's mother. Does that meet with your approval?
Of course.
Inevra nodded and turned to regard the others.
If you will excuse us, please.
You heard her? Shoo! Oh, not you, Roger.
Only Leisha stood behind.
You have no place here, daughter of Ernie. You are not family to the groom or brides.
Oh, but I am, Demaja. If my mother stands for Rogers, then I, as her daughter, may take the place of his sister. The Avija is quite clear on the matter.
I want her to stay.
As you wish.
Lock the doors, Leisha. Can't have Garrett stumbling back in saying he forgot his axe.
The sight of their joint amusement frightened Roger more than anything. Ilona seemed to know far more than Roger about what was happening. Leisha seemed equally disturbed, but whether it was from the laughter or the casual way Ilona ordered her around, she couldn't be sure. She turned and strode to the huge gilded doors. He felt more like they were locking him in than Garrett and the others out. Inevra snapped her fingers, and the two girls straightened their backs, though they remained on their knees on the floor.
Amandva is Damating, healer, midwife, and chosen of Evaram. She is young, but she has made her dice and passed every test.
Inevra looked at Leisha and smiled.
Perhaps she can treat those cuts on your face.
She indicated the red lines on Leisha's cheek from where Inevra had scratched her.
You seem to be blinking a great deal, Demaja. Do your eyes sting you? I could prepare a rinse if you wish.
I myself have given my husband 8 sons and 3 daughters. The women of my family are similarly fertile, and the bones say Amandva will breed true.
Bones?
That is no concern of yours, Chin. What matters is that Amandva will give you sons, son of Jessam. Sigfa's mother was similarly fertile. She too will breed well for you.
Yes, but can they sing?
It was the punchline of a favorite bawdy joke of Eric's, a tale of a man who could never be satisfied no matter how many women he bedded.
Of course.
Inevra spoke in her native tongue.
Amandva, sing.
Roger didn't understand the words and had never had a knack for singing himself. But after years of performing with Eric, the greatest singer of his time, he knew well how to listen and judge it. Amandva's voice put Eric's to shame. It lifted him like a great wind, stealing the footing from under him and sweeping him away on its notes. But then a second wind came, wrapping itself around the other as Sigfa smoothly joined in. They found harmony instantly, and Roger was stunned. Women or no, if they went to the Jongleurs Guild in Angiers, their careers would be assured. Roger said nothing, standing in silence while the two young women sang. When Inevra finally ended their song with a wave, he felt like a puppet with its strings suddenly cut.
Sigfa is also an accomplished cook, and both had been trained in the art of lovemaking, though they are unknown to men.
The art?
Inevra snapped her fingers. Amandva immediately rose, coming gracefully to her feet as she lifted a hand to unfasten her veil. The thin white silk drifted away like a wisp of smoke, revealing a face stunning in its beauty. Amandva was her mother's daughter. Sigfa came up behind her, undoing some hidden fastening at her shoulders, and Amandva's entire robe seemed to simply dissolve, the silk running off her to whisper to the floor. She stood naked before him, and Roger gaped. Inevra circled a finger, and Amandva obediently turned so Roger could inspect her from every angle. Like her mother's, Amanva's body was perfect, and Roger began to fear even his motley pants were not loose enough. He wondered if he would be expected to undress as well and have all the women see his arousal.
Creator, is all this truly necessary?
Be quiet. Of course it is.
Amanva turned and unfastened Sikva's own silk robe, and it vanished like a shadow in the sun, becoming an inky pool at her feet. She was not as beautiful as Amanva, perhaps, but apart from the other women in the room with him just then, Roger had never seen her equal.
You may verify their purity now.
That won't be necessary.
Your women. Something must be saved for the wedding night, after all.
And Everett turned to Ilona.
Would you care to do the honors?
My daughter is more qualified.
My mother wouldn't know a hymen if she saw one. She was rid of hers before she had a good look at it.
Ilona caught the words and scowled, but she said nothing, glaring at Leisha.
Oh, all right. Anything to get this business concluded.
Leisha bent to pick up the girls' robes, then took their arms and led them into a small, curtained servant alcove to the side of the hall. Leisha lowered the curtain, blocking them from view, and the girls obediently leaned over a small table, presenting themselves like brood mares. She had examined hundreds of young girls in her years as an herb gatherer, even the Duchess of Angiers herself, but it was always for their health, not some honor ritual. Bruna had little patience for such nonsense, and her apprentice was no different. But Leisha knew, too, how fragile their relationship with the Crasians was. She would win no allies by publicly spitting on their traditions. Amanva's hymen was intact, but when Leisha reached for Sikva, the girl flinched. There was a sheen of sweat on her, and her olive skin seemed paler than before. She clenched tight when Leisha slipped a finger into her, but it was not enough. She wasn't a virgin. Leisha smirked. As barbaric as this ritual was, it had just given them reason to claim offense and refuse the girls before Roger said something foolish. But then the girl looked back at her, and the fear in her eyes was a slap in the face. Amanva caught the look and scowled.
Get dressed.
Leisha tossed them their robes. Sikva quickly dressed, and then moved to assist Amanva, who glared at her as she fastened the Damating's silk robe. Leisha's face was serene as she returned with the girls. Roger knew the verdict was irrelevant. He was no more going to marry Jardir's daughter than Leisha was the man himself. But for some reason, his heart was thudding in his chest as if his life depended on the answer.
Both virgins, for what it's worth.
Of course.
But Amanva did not seem to agree. She moved to her mother, whispering in her ear and pointing first at Sikva and then at Leisha. And Evera's face darkened like the sky before a storm, and she strode over to Sikva, grabbing the girl by her long braid. Roger started for them, but Ilona grabbed his arm so hard it hurt, holding him back with surprising strength.
Don't be stupid, fiddle boy.
Sikva was dragged behind the examination curtain. Amanva followed, pulling it shut behind them.
What in the core just happened?
Sikva's not a virgin.
But you said she was.
I know what can happen to a girl when people start questioning her purity. And I'll be corspond before I do it to anyone else.
Can't save people from themselves, Leisha. Your little lies probably made it worse for her still. You just told the truth and let me ask for a bag of gold to make up for her lost value. It would have been done with already.
She's a human being, Mother, not
Will you both please shut it?
Both women glared at him angrily, but they quieted. There was no sound from the curtain now, and that scared Roger all the more. He was about to rush over when it opened and Anevera strode back to them, Amanva and Sikva in tow. Amanva had her arm around the other girl, comforting her and offering support. Roger's heart went to them, and his hand slipped up to touch his medallion through his shirt. Anevera bowed to Roger.
I apologize for the insult to you, son of Jessam. Your weed picker has lied to you. Sikva is impure and will, of course, be punished severely for her lies. I beg you not to doubt my daughter's honor by her association with this harlot.
There was a pause as everyone waited for his response. Roger's eyes flicked around the room, and it seemed as if every woman was holding her breath. Why? They had given no thought to him at all a moment ago. But then it hit him.
I'm the offended. After hearing them sing, I will not break the set. Sikva's voice is more important to me than her purity.
Ah. That is most forgiving of you. More than this harlot deserves.
I'm not deciding anything yet. But I would prefer she not be subject to undue stress that might affect her voice before I do.
Ynevra smiled behind her gossamer veil as if he had passed some kind of test.
Well, this will affect the dower, of course.
Oh, of course. If you will agree to chaperone, the girls may stay in the son of Jessam's wing, that he might accustom to them and ensure their lack of stress before he makes his decision.
Oh, my mother is an excellent chaperone.
Aubyn arrived just before sunset to escort them to the whipping. Leisha made a last check of the herbs and implements in her basket, breathing deeply to quell her churning stomach. For what they did to Wanda, the Dalsharim deserved no less, but that did not mean Leisha wanted to watch their backs torn open. After seeing how lax the Krasians were about healing, though, she worried the wounds might infect and kill the men anyway if she did not treat them herself.
I hope you understand the honor my master pays you and the daughter of Flynn by administering the whipping personally, rather than leaving it to some Dama who might be lenient in sympathy to their act.
The Dama have sympathy for rapists?
You must understand, mistress, that our ways are different from yours. The fact that you and your women walk freely with your faces and your charms showing offends a great many men who fear you put illicit ideas into the minds of their own women.
And so they sought to show Wanda her place.
Yes. My master has commanded that the Damaji attend as well, with their Kai Sharam. He wishes them to see that they must accept some of your ways.
Aman said it was much the same when he met the Parchin.
My master mentioned the Parchin?
I did, actually. I was surprised that Aman knew him, too.
Oh, yes. My master and the Parchin were great friends. Aman was his Ajinpal.
Ajinpal?
His blood brother, perhaps you would say. Aman showed him the maze, and they bled for each other.